Strategic Christian Services, in association with Dominion Enterprises, is pleased to present Let's Talk, Communication Skills for People Who Want Healthy Relationships, with Dennis Peacock. This is Lesson 4, entitled The Rules of Engagement, Defining Our Use of Language.
Hi, I'm Dennis Peacock, and we're back with another session of Let's Talk. We're talking about how do we communicate in such a way that we effectively build deep relationships, are able to accomplish the tasks that our relationships are designed to accomplish, and how do we experience life with other people? How do we break out of the isolation that we sometimes live in so that we're able to really communicate and build bridges of trust? I'm delighted that you're with us. I'm sure that this is going to change your life if you not only listen, but practice what we're talking about. Well, we're back for another session of Let's Talk. I trust that you've had some time to digest what we talked about, and we're going to continue to progress in terms of discussing the skills, and today we're going to talk about the specific skills of language and what languages do we use in our communication. And one of the key questions that we have is, why is the choice of our words so important, especially when we get under pressure in terms of our communication? Growing relationships are deepening because we are aware of the language that we're communicating, and we have already discussed to some degree some of the rules of the language that we're going to use. And again, I trust that you're aware that I'm not sharing theory. I'm sharing things out of my life, out of the life of other people that have practiced these tools of communication. And my life is a testimony that these things work. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the use of words. Obviously, when we think about communication, we think about the use of our words. What do the words mean? Where do we place them? What is the purpose of the words that we use? You know, why did you choose to describe how you felt that way rather than this way? Did you say you were angry rather than saying that you were disturbed? Are you working through something with me, or do you communicate that you've come to a conclusion? In other words, the meaning of our words has a tremendous influence on our ability to really communicate what it is that we're trying to say, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. The second thing that we, part of the language, and I put language in quotes, is the language of our emotions. How do we use our emotions? And how do we use our intonation? Because emotions express intensity, either the lack of intensity, the level of intensity, or the use of intensity in our communication. And emotions are the drums that we're pounding on, either light or heavy. It's the rhythm. Emotions tend to give rhythm to our communication as well. The third thing, and some people, I've seen studies on this, say, in many cases, this is the most important, is our body language. That actually, I've seen a number of studies that say about 70% of what people actually get off of us in terms of communication is more the way that we are presenting ourselves than the actual words that we're using. And of course, people in the entertainment industry in a visual world are very, very aware of that, and that's why they put so much energy into the way people present themselves more than what they actually say. I might say in my lifetime, Jan and I, in our generation, have seen a tremendous change in the way that people use words. To some degree, our language is falling apart. I'll come back to that. But back in the 50s and 60s, when somebody asked you a question, you would say, "I think." Now it's politically incorrect to say, "I think." You would say, "I feel." We've shifted away from a logical or intellectual, analytical view of reality to an emotional view of reality. And, you know, that has ups and downs, pluses and minuses. But I've noticed that, you know, as a communicator, professional communicator, so to speak, I pay a lot of attention to the words that people use. And you can see people trying to get their words back into their mouth when they say something like, "I think," because it shows, especially if you're a male, it allegedly shows that you're really not in touch with your emotions and your feelings, and people are living increasingly out of their emotions with less and less focus on thinking, rationality, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's a cultural phenomena that I'm sure in years will pass. And it also shows, to some degree, the declining level of education. It's part of the reason why our SAT scores, our testing scores for educational levels in the Western world, or certainly in the United States, continue to drop, is because we are less and less concerned about learning things and facts and history and how to think and how to communicate, and more concerned about expressing our feelings, which has got, again, ups and downs to it. The fourth kind of language that we can use is what I call the language of recruitment. And that shows up in this form, that if we get into some level of intensity in our communication, we say, not only do I feel this way about you, but John and Bill and Sue do as well. In other words, we recruit other people into the conversation when we feel that our argument is not strong enough. You know, we try and raise a small army to join us. And that's, you know, a language of recruitment. And then fifthly, the language of importance. And that is, when do we choose to start the conversation? And why do we choose to start it when we do? And when do we end it? For example, and again, we're going to talk a little bit more about this in another context. One of the things that Jan and I have learned in our marriage over the years is that you don't try and discuss a one-hour problem in 5 minutes. And I can't tell you out of personal experience how many hassles and arguments that we got into simply because we tried to put a problem into a time slot that would not fit. And that is very, very important, that if we're going to have a discussion that we know has got depth to it, that we make sure we don't put a 1 or 2 hour problem into a 15-minute conversation. Well, let me say that it's important that we discuss with one another as much as we can, especially if we're trying to build a deep relationship, the use of the different languages. For example, I'm sitting here with my legs crossed. Some people would interpret that as a protective stance or arms folded. I'm actually doing it because I'm resting my teaching notes here. But the way that we sit, the way that we posture ourselves, what does that mean? I mean, as we get to know each other more deeply, if somebody, you know, folds their arms real firm or real hard, or, you know, you get into the facial gestures of emoting. I'm sure all of you can think of some people who, when they get into situations they don't like, they start emoting. They start, they'll sigh or they'll snort. You know, I think about raising the kids, who are good kids. But one of the things that Jan and I really worked on, of course, because I traveled so much, Jan did the lion's share of this, was making sure that when the kids were communicating, they weren't going into rolling their eyes or facial gestures or all kinds of body language, that while their words might have been okay, they were communicating very strongly in their emotions and their tones, something that's unacceptable in terms of really clear and legitimate communication. Well, let's talk about the use of words for a minute. I am reminded of Alice in Wonderland and some of the discussions that Alice had. I think it was with the Mad Hatter, and they were talking about the use of words. And maybe it was the one that was smoking the opium pipe. I can't remember, forgive me, which one it was, and I should. And somebody who's joined us here watching or listening to this tape will say, Dennis, you should remember, but I don't. But anyway, the discussion went, the Mad Hatter, whoever it was, the cat. What was the Cheshire Cat? Thank you, Jen. I think it might have been the Cheshire Cat, but the Cheshire Cat was making a word mean something that the dictionary said it couldn't mean. Mm-hmm. And Alice said, you can't use words like that. It's not proper. And the Cheshire Cat said, or the Mad Hatter, whoever, said, the point is not the meaning of the words. The point is who has the power. Mm-hmm. Who has the power to make the words mean what they want to mean? And again, in this culture, in the Western world, in the United States, slang, by the way, you know, English is what's called a living language because it's growing all the time. But slang is frequently the description of a culture that is no longer concerned with exactness of communication. Winston Churchill, great man of history, in fact, voted the man of the 20th century in terms of his effect on the 20th century, made a very wry comment that many of us are aware of. He described the English and the Americans as a people united but separated by a common language. Even though we both speak English, and Joe, you being from New Zealand, we have fun teasing you because, you know, we obviously speak English, but our words can sometimes mean exactly the opposite. And you wonder, how did that ever happen? We won't go into that. But the question is, what do we mean by our words? So many times we get into a discussion and one or the other of us is using a word that means one thing to me, but it may mean a very, very different thing to you. And again, because marriage, the closer the relationship, the more opportunity we have to really discover what words mean or don't mean. Jan and I had gone on for years sometimes having disagreements or not being able to get through some snag in our communication, only to discover that we had very, very different meanings with the same word. So a lot of times communication can be very frustrated simply because we're not meaning the same thing with the word. So we need to define what those words mean, especially if they're key words in the conversation. For example, and this takes me back into my own past, which is an interesting past, being a child of the 60s and involved in the New Left and language strategy. I had a period, you know, which in those days of my radical background, where I was very much aware of what we call language strategy, where you take a word, you empty it of its content, you put the content back in the word that you want it to mean, and then you begin to change the whole meaning of the word in the culture. Now, the Marxists, of course, were the masters of language strategy. For example, what does the word freedom mean? If we're going to have a discussion around, I want to be free, we could go outside this living room and interview 100 people on this block, and we'd probably come up with 100 different definitions of what does it mean to be free. You know, freedom means, or love, back in the 60s we had that movie with Ryan O'Neill, love means never having to say you're sorry. You know, what in the world does that mean? Is that really what love means? That I never have to say I'm sorry. I mean, we've got all this idiotic communication about what words mean. But what does love mean? Is love sex? Is love commitment? Is love covenant with people? Is love a feeling? Is love an action? You know, what is love? We say, I love you. Well, what does that really mean? What does it mean when we say, I'm committed to do this or you're committed to do that? We need to be very clear on what these words and what these terms mean, because words have in them the power of expectations. If we don't define what our expectations are relative to what those words mean, we are setting ourselves up for real hassles in our communication. And again, the stuff here in Let's Talk is applicable to our families, our children, our parents, male-female relationships. We talk about culture. We talk about Ebonics, you know, and the whole hassles we have because of racism, for example, in this country. And one of the deep concerns that I have, again, my background in political science and political theory, a nation is based on the concept of having common language and common transcendent values. And that's why it's very important that everybody within a country speaks a common language and has a common understanding as to what the words mean. Otherwise, real unity is an impossibility. And that's not only true on a macro level, a political level, it's absolutely true in terms of cross-ethnic communication, male-female communication. Again, males and females oftentimes do not have the same idea in their minds at all, even though they're using a common word. And we get really hassled and really crossed up with one another. We get stuck in our communication because we haven't taken the time to define, well, what does that word mean? And again, that takes patience, and that's a skill that is essential to real communication. The time of this filming, we are in the post-World Trade Center bombings, and everywhere we go, we see the signs, you know, God bless America. Well, what does that really mean? What God are we talking about? What does bless mean? I mean, again, you got a nation that's got 10,000 different meanings to what we mean by God and what we mean by bless and et cetera, et cetera. So while we may appear to be in unity, we may be meaning very, very different things. And isn't it true that pressure reveals where we are not in the same mind? Well, let me shift here, and I want to talk about two different kinds of words, usage of words, that we need to make sure that we don't use, or if we are using them, we're aware of them. The first one is what I call round words. Round words are words or phrases that give us the room to maneuver. For example, Adam, you and I have agreed that we want to have lunch. And I say, Adam, let's have lunch. And you say, well, what time should we meet? Or where should we meet? So, okay, we'll meet at McDonald's. And because I want room to maneuver, what I'm going to say, well, Adam, I'll see you about 12. What's the operative word in that phrase? It's about. About is a round word because a round word gives me the room to not be held accountable to any exact situation. And those kinds of phrases show up a lot of times in communication, like, I'll call you sometime. The moment somebody says, I'll call you sometime, I know that there's no real commitment and there's no real accountability. Or I think I might do that. What I hear, again, this is where males and females have a field day of miscommunication. When the woman hears, I'll call you, the man says, I might call you. We can talk about, and this will come up later in the Bridge of Trust, husbands or whatever, I say to Jan, I'll be home about 6. Well, Jan hears 6, I hear about. Okay? So we have this tendency to not want to be committed, so we use words that give us maneuvering room. Now, round words oftentimes reveal a flawed character. See, I'm going to ruin you if you really are hearing what I'm saying, because once you become attentive to round words and you begin to hear when you use round words or when other people use round words, what you're going to see is, you know what, that person is communicating that they really don't want to be held accountable. Therefore, I'm not going to be able to trust them on a very deep level. Because the need to maneuver, the need to be unaccountable, reveals that you really don't want a deep relationship, because deep relationships are built on mutual accountability. All relationships are defined by the level of accountability that the people want in the relationship. The deeper the relationship, the deeper the level of accountability. The deeper the relationship, the greater effort not to use round words. Because we're talking about the bridge of trust here. We're talking about how do I eliminate the need to maneuver or not be held accountable. Now, if I'm hoping that I'm communicating clearly enough that you'll not only listen for round words in other people, but you'll listen for round words that you use so that you will begin to deepen your ability to be trusted. Because you can't really trust people who use round words because they're communicating they don't want to be held accountable. Okay? Now, I could say, I'm not going to go into it at length, but let's go back to the situation here where I'll be there about 12 at McDonald's. I show up at 12:20. Adam is worried. I show up at 12:45. Now the game is on. When I see Adam, our faces are going to begin to communicate the level of our relationship. If Adam does not confront me, as in saying, Dennis, you know, you're 45 minutes late. I was really worried about you. What happened? If he doesn't confront me, what he is communicating is that our relationship is not worth mutual accountability. And then our relationship is going to become more and more superficial. Now, the game is on based on how I respond. If I back off, Adam, if I play the emotional game because I don't want to be held accountable, what I'm saying to Adam is I'm shutting him down, is, hey, I don't want a relationship where I'm held accountable. Now, I may choose to hold you accountable, but don't you hold me accountable. And if I don't ask his forgiveness or repent, to use that kind of language, we have just pulled up a lot of planks in the bridge of trust between us, because what I'm communicating to Adam is, hey, look, I want what I want on my terms. I don't want a relationship where we are held mutually accountable. And I could go off on a lot of different scenarios on that example that I've used. But the use of round words does not build trust. And in marriage counseling, Jan and I have seen this over the years time and time again. And in our own relationship, you know, we've seen it where the husband says, you know, I'll be home about 6, and they constantly show up at 7. Or I'll see you at this, and then they never show up. Well, what that does is build a deep resentment and a deep mistrust. And, you know, the husband may say, hey, look, I've been faithful to you. I've never been with another person, or yana, yana, yana. And they start in their list of, why are you reacting to me this way? Well, the Bible says the little foxes spoil the field. And it's a constant misuse of being held accountable that can lead to a big explosion, because our language is filled with round words and it builds mistrust. The second kind of words that I want to talk about here for a moment is what I call war words. War words are words that are designed by their very emotional content or the nature of the word to back somebody off or put somebody in a box or put them in a corner. Some examples of these destructive kind of words are you never or you always. See, one of the rules that Jan and I have in our relationship, and we've had it for years, is that when we get into it, we virtually never say you never. Because the moment I say to Jan, you never, I've absolutely destroyed the possibility that, well, sometimes she does do what I... You know, it's like she could say to me, you never show up on time for dinner. Well, the truth of the matter is I may show up on time for dinner, you know, 50% of the time. And if she says never, then I think, what do I think about? I think about all the times I have shown up for dinner on time, and it shows me, it makes me lose trust for saying, well, you don't appreciate, you don't even pay attention when I show up for dinner. What is your trip? What is your problem? So you never is something you cannot say if you want a deep relationship. Or you always say that to me, or you always do this, or whatever. You can't do that. Those are war words. They put people in a box. They're virtually never true, and they don't allow people to feel like you're paying attention to when you actually are doing the thing that you're accused of. Or how about this? And this is something parents do that is so destructive. They say, well, you will never change. Well, you want to destroy a child's desire to change, accuse them of never changing. Those are war words we cannot use. What we want to do is use words that draw one another out, not shut each other down. War words shut each other down. Or even too much intensity. One of the challenges of my life has been moderating my emotions, because when I get aroused, like most people, I tend to put a lot of force and a lot of soul power, a lot of emotion comes out, which can shut the conversation down. Certainly depending upon who you're talking to. If you're talking to somebody else that's used to using a lot of emotion in a conversation, it doesn't matter that much. But that, I'm being funny here and stereotypic, I know. But it's the difference between, you know, two Englishmen talking to one another or an Italian talking to an Englishman. You know, you've got a massive difference in cultural communication. In fact, one of the funny stories or lines that we hear is a sadist is somebody who ties an Italian's hands behind his back and then asks him a question. Because Italians are talking with their hands. Again, I know that's a stereotypic view. But when you have different cultures, male, female, you've got very different rules of engagement about the use of emotions. And we need to come to agreements and understanding about how we're going to use emotions and what could be perceived as too much intensity. For example, I've noticed, you know, again, a stereotype, but I've got a lot of Italian friends or Jewish friends. There's a whole level of confrontation that goes in those cultures that would be different, for example, than the French or the English. And African American has got different levels of communication than Europeans. There are different rules of the games in communication, and we need to be clear what the rules are that we're playing by, lest we interpret emotional intensity as a sign of war or a sign of aggression. I've got some Italian friends that when they really want to talk, they get right up in your face like this. And I tend to be more English, obviously, than Italian. And when somebody gets in my face like this, you know, I feel crowded. I feel pressure from the space. I want space sometimes. The more intense it gets, my tendency as a human being is to want more space physically and less space. But there's other cultures that closeness is actually a sign of commitment, not a sign of aggression. So we need to be clear on, you know, what the body languages are, what the words are, et cetera, et cetera. Lastly, what I want to talk about here for a moment is what I call the ladder of inference, or what is some psychologists or communication folks call the ladder of inference. And that is, now with Jan, you know, I'm being silly here, but a male-female difference. I had a situation years ago, and Jan and I have laughed about this over the years, and we teach sometimes together in this stuff. This didn't literally happen, but it's like, you know, the cat tipped over the soup, the front door won't shut, the phone was ringing all day, and I want to sell the house. And you go, what? How does the cat and the soup and the door and the ringing phone have anything to do with selling the house? That's called ladder of inference. You just jumped off a cliff. How did you get there? Show me rung by rung by rung. How did you ever come to that conclusion? And males and females, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. The levels of communication and the ladders of inference are sometimes totally from another planet. And if we don't share how we came to the conclusions we came to, we're going to have a lot of communication problems. And again, that would be ethnic as well. There can be whole differences in our ethnicity of how one culture comes to a conclusion and what a gesture may mean or an intonation, very, very different between cultures. Let me tell you a quick story, and I'll close on this ladder of inference. It's a classic, a preacher that Jan and I knew very well years ago named Jim Durkin told the story. It's a story about a man who's out selling on a cold, windy night. It's late. He's out in the middle of the country. He gets a flat tire. He goes to the back of the car. He has no jack. He sees a light in a farmhouse about 2 miles back down the road. It's pouring rain, so he starts off. And, you know, he's thinking in his mind, his internal conversation. And he's saying, you know what, I'm just going to get there and I'm going to get this guy out of bed and he isn't going to want to get up. And, you know, people are uptight about strangers knocking in the middle of the night. And I need this jack and I just can't imagine, you know, he may not have a jack. He may tell me to go away. And by the time he gets there, the light has gone out in the farmhouse and he bangs on the door. He knows negatively. He's already set himself up. This is not going to happen. He knocks on the door and finally the light turns on and actually a kind voice of a man yells down, yes, what can I do to help you? And he says, and you can keep your old jack anyway. Are you with me? He had already built up the story in his mind as to what was going to happen. And we do that with one another all too often. We come to a conclusion without letting the other person into, how did you get there? So if we're going to have effective communication, we need to be sharing with one another our ladders, the steps by which we come to the conclusions we come to. And that is what builds trust, because we're opening up the way that we think and, you know, the way that our emotions operate to one another. We're being self-revealing. Well, I trust that this has been helpful to you as we're sitting around here in the living room sharing out of life experiences. And I want to encourage those of you that have joined us here on the audio or the visual, that you will go to our website, that you'll get the materials that are available to you. I trust that you're listening clearly enough and you're identifying destructive habits or things that you haven't known, tools that you haven't known how to use. You never were taught by your parents, or maybe we're talking about things that you were taught that you've forgotten. These are skills that are required, because love is not enough. Love alone is not enough to make a relationship go where it needs to go. We need the skills of communication. We're looking forward to sharing more with you on this series, Let's Talk. Again, I want to remind us that we're dealing with the whole question that we have there on our easel board, is are we clear on the languages that we're using in our communication and how critical that is? If you're like me, until I began to become self-consciously aware of these different languages, I never even thought about it. You know, it's like we think we naturally know how to communicate because we know how to use words. But the truth of the matter is we're not very advanced in our, most people are not very advanced in their communication skills because nobody has ever even taught them. Well, let's do some questions. What is clear, what's not clear? Joe?
Well, I'm aware from what you've been talking about the different emotions or languages I'm using. And I want to be about transformation in my relationships. But what if you've been in a pattern from childhood and it hasn't really been addressed? You've been away from home a number of times and are in a place of really emoting in a way you don't want to. But it's such a natural reaction. Mm. As soon as you get into conflict or pain, that is exactly what you go to. And I'm just wondering, you know, where would you start in dealing with that or with such a natural?
And that's a great question. And it's the challenge that all of us have. Because it's the things that we've either consciously done or unconsciously done for years and years that are habits that are really hard to break. And I don't have any easy answer for that. Actually, when we get several lessons more, when we talk about how to defend our relationships, I'm going to talk about repentance and regrooving and retraining. But the simple answer is, first of all, we need to recognize the pattern and that it's not working, it's not effective, it may even be destructive. And then we need to make a common agreement with ourselves, with God, with other people, that we recognize that that pattern is destructive and we agree that we don't want to use it and we agree that we're going to hold ourselves accountable and ask the other people in our relationships to hold us accountable to not use that pattern. But it is hard work. But again, the work is well worth it because the relationship is worth the hassle. Love means not never having to say, I'm sorry. Love means I'm willing to go through a lot of pain and a lot of hassle for the sake of this relationship. That's a true picture of love. Jan?
Along those lines, the thing that I became really aware of as you were talking about the ladder of inference today, which I really hadn't been before, is that communication requires us to be more aware of ourselves also. I think a lot of times we respond without really understanding why we're responding. And we don't even know our own ladder of inference in order to share it with other people.
Exactly.
And if we are going to be communicators with others, we have to pay more attention really to our own processes rather than just emoting without thought. We have to, in our communications, really have an awareness of our own thought processes in order to be able to communicate well with others.
And that's really true. And again, your point, which is very well taken, is many, many times we're not aware of how we came to that conclusion. And if we're not aware of it, somebody trying to follow our thought process, you know, it's like really a 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, you know, that's a complete mess. Help me. Give me some clues. And again, that's both ethnic, male, female, organizational, different businesses. You got one climate in the business, another climate in another company, and there's major hassles in communication on this level alone, not just on a personnel level, but in not just different nations, but different climates of communication in different organizations. Adam, you had a question.
Yeah, I'm really finding it helpful in regards to talking about language outside of just the words we use. I'm thinking of a scenario where someone says to someone else, you know, I'm really coming to the end of my rope right now in a very emotional place, and the person responds, you know, I really love peppermint ice cream. and sometimes that doesn't so much have to do with not listening to the person, but with a little bit of just, you know, that they wanted to share that they like peppermint ice cream, they were thinking about it earlier in the day, whatever.
Totally out of context.
Out of context. Yeah, yeah. And if you could talk a little bit more about context or timing, even in terms of how long we wait to respond, or I don't know, any of those things that also play a role in our communication.
Well, there's so many things that are in the comment you just made. Let me just use one that I found very helpful. Is, again, we get back into the difference between listening, really listening, or waiting to speak. If you make a comment to me that I can tell by your body language, by your voice, by your emotional content, etc., that I know is important to you and it's something you don't think I hear, if I'm on my game, I'm going to stop and I'm not going to respond for a little while. I'm going to give 5-10 seconds sometimes. And I'm not just saying this to play a game, so that I really can let what you've shared sink into me before I respond. That's very, very important. You know, we get in the heat of battle, so to speak, when we're in a difference of opinion. And we say, I say this, you say the blue, blue, blue. It's like a fast tennis game. That's a loser's game. That's not a game that is going to take you where you want to go. And again, making sure that our responses are directly related to what the person just said, rather than pulling something out of left field, because that shows I may have been paying attention. You know, we get into the whole male-female things where women can do more than one thing at the same time we men tend not to. They really do hear, but then they go off on a tangent. That offends us as men because we're saying, wait a minute, how do we get to peppermint ice cream? I thought we were talking about something we really cared about. So we need to make sure that we're, and again, we'll talk about this in a little while, that our feedback is consistent with what the person has shared. Aline, you were going to bring something up.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking when you were talking, actually, I used that word. You were talking about the culture here where people just keep saying, you know, I feel this, or what do you feel about this? And coming from Europe and growing up there, we definitely use I think all the time.
Yes.
So for me, that was a big discourage that, oh, okay, people just feel about things here. And my question is, actually, what do you see will be what is coming next after this I feel period and I think period here in the U.S.?
That's a great question, and I wish I could give you a really clear answer. I know that Western rationalism and rationality and logic and all that, part of the reaction against it is it created a bridge or a gap of real relational intimacy. And there's no question about that. And again, you as a Swiss European, when we as Americans go to other cultures and see the differences, we can see how our culture has trapped us in some real relational problems. But again, all cultures have different strengths and weaknesses. But I'm not playing the prophet here. I don't know where this is going to go in the U.S., but I'm sure it has got to change because you can't live on emotions. Emotions are given to us to strengthen clear thinking, not to be a substitute for clear thinking. So we'll just have to wait and see where it goes. Well, we look forward to having you join us in our next session of Let's Talk. We really hope this has been helpful. Please, you know, for the sake of your relationships, we're trusting that you'll avail yourself of the tools that we've prepared to help Let's Talk be something that really changes your life, deepens your relationships, and makes you a whole lot more effective in what you're trying to accomplish. Bless you.
This is a copyrighted program of Rebuild and Dominion Enterprises. Unauthorized duplication is prohibited. Strategic Christian Services offers a wide variety of other educational materials and training schools designed to help you live life to its fullest. For more information on our products and services, please call us at 1-800-700-0605. Join us online at www.gostrategic.org or write to us at Post Office Box 2709, Santa Rosa, California 95405.